has a fireworks ordinance in place, but unfortunately, it was created in a way that made it difficult for law enforcement to enforce. The way it's currently written, the officer has to physically see the individual discharge the firework in order to cite the responsible party. When 99% of these fireworks are discharged in the backyard, you can understand why the current ordinance is difficult to enforce. What the revised ordinance would change is the officer can determine where the fireworks are being discharged and cite the property owner directly. This ordinance would also apply to Airbnbs and boats. This will be coming before the Board of Supervisors on May 18th for approval, and I want to thank this board, the Discovery Bay CSD, for supporting our efforts and sending a letter of support to dissuade people from using illegal fireworks in Contra Costa County. I appreciate it and thank you. And just a quick update too on the Pantages development. This went before the County Planning Commission last week and was approved unanimously. And this will be going before the Board of Supervisors sometime in July, and I will keep you posted as that continues to move forward. And then lastly, on COVID, all county-run vaccine sites are now accepting walk-ins without appointments. This continues our effort to remove barriers to vaccination and make the process as easy as possible. In our appointment reminders for those who have scheduled vaccinations, we are encouraging everyone to bring friends and family, even if they don't have appointments. And if there's no, that concludes our report.
Leah, this is Chair Couteau. Quick question. Do you happen to have an update on the code enforcement regarding sound walls? I know that was something that was looked at a while back.
Yes, it is there. Unfortunately, or fortunately, I've had a couple other things come up that has kept the Department of Conservation and Development busy with. But as soon as I can get through my two big projects, that is what's in line. I promise I will get that done for you guys.
Thank you. We appreciate it. Any comments?
Thank you, Leah.
Thank you,
Leah Rodriguez.
Oh, my goodness. Thank you. I am Leah Rodriguez. I didn't know if you know who I was if I said that. So I am Leah Rodriguez now.
Z or S?
Z.
Thank you, Leah. Okay, moving forward, do we have a representative of the Sheriff's Office on the line?
Yes, good evening. Mark Johnson, Lieutenant of the Sheriff's Office. Can you hear me?
Perfectly.
All right, cool. Well, I don't think that was fair that Leah got the cut, but I guess I'll let this slide. So for April, at the station house, we had 25 arrests for the Discovery Bay area. We had 370 calls for service. We took 27 reports. If you've noticed, the last week or so, we put a car over at the Sandy Cove Shopping Center, one of our spare canine cars, in hopes of keeping bad guys away. And talking with CVS and Safeway, they did notice a drop this week, so I'm hoping that actually worked. So every once in a while, we're going to keep putting a car over there in different spots. So if somebody does come there, they're going to see that car right away and hopefully take off. I've got 2 days lined up this month that we're going to have a couple of traffic officers come in and specifically work Discovery Bay Boulevard and the Newport area looking for speeders and stop sign violators. I'm still getting a ton of complaints related to traffic, so we're going to see if we can start making that happen now every month. Let's see, some of the calls we've been to. So today we actually had a pretty good caper. At about 3 o'clock this afternoon, one of our AL PAR cameras, license plate reader cameras, hit on a stolen car on Bixler near the Safeway. So our deputies, myself included, we started heading that way looking for this car. While we were en route to the area, we had a report of an attempted armed robbery at the Safeway gas station. And we had a description of the suspect and the car matched the stolen car that we were just alerted to. So a couple minutes later, I'm actually driving down Balfour, and I see the car pass me on Balfour headed towards Brentwood. So make a U-turn. When I did that, the car takes off. It starts driving through a field. trying to get away over to Chestnut Street, and then immediately cut into an orchard with a bunch of trees and shrubbery. So I didn't follow the car in this. I didn't want to get stuck, and people wouldn't know where I'm at. But we still have a big perimeter in that area around this orchard. Our helicopter came overhead and was able to spot the car. Then we waited for our canine officer to come because we were going to send our canine in. While we were waiting, the suspect ended up running from the orchard over into a neighborhood next door in Brentwood and started jumping fences. Our helicopter and drone was able to keep an eye on the suspect. We ultimately took that suspect into custody with the help of our canine. So that suspect is currently being treated at Kaiser for dog bite wounds. But it turns out not only was he involved in this robbery, attempted robbery, there was also two auto burglaries today in Byron, and this was a suspect vehicle that was involved in that. So it's pretty much all thanks to our ALPR cameras, because we were alerted right away that this car was in the area, and that's why we were able to head that way and catch him before he left. So it was a good job by all the deputies that were working today. So some of the stuff that we dealt with in April, we had a pursuit of a motorcycle on Bixler near Point of Timber. The motorcycle tried to make a U-turn and ended up kind of dumping the bike in the dirt. He was taken into custody and found to have a gun in his waistband. We had a theft at CVS where the manager called because she noticed two people coming into the store acting suspiciously. So instead of waiting to see if they stole something, she called us and asked if we'd kind of stand by in the area. So they got a bunch of items, but they ended up dumping everything before they left the store. They got to a car and took off. We ended up making a traffic stop on them. One of them had a warrant for burglary, and the other one did not have a driver's license. So we ended up towing that car and giving her a ticket for that as well. We had one auto burglary this last month, and it was a window smash where nothing was taken, which is pretty odd because typically if they're going to break a window, there's something in there they see. But it may have been that they saw something, they thought they saw something, but didn't. We had one residential burglary, but the victim knows the suspect, and the suspect knew there was a large amount of cash inside the house. So we were trying to locate that suspect. We had a couple petty thefts. A tailgate was stolen off a truck. We had some work tools stolen out of a truck. The homeowner actually had a good surveillance camera, and we identified what we thought is the suspect. We ended up contacting him. He denied everything. He didn't have the property on him, but we wrote that report up to the DA's office for prosecution, so we'll see if that happens or not. We took three people under mental health evaluation. What else do we have? We had a bicycle stolen in front of the Safeway. We did actually have decent video, but we have not been able to identify the suspect yet. And we had one domestic battery arrest, and we did arrest a juvenile for attacking his mother, which is an ongoing problem with this particular household, but the juvenile was finally arrested and taken to juvenile hall for that. But other than that, I don't have anything else, but I'm open for any questions.
That seems like quite a bit.
Yeah.
Well, certainly, I know the board appreciates all the hard work you and your deputies do. In your opinion, would you say that our crime currently is at a low percentage or a higher percentage? Or I know you gave a great report last time, but...
Right now it's low, knock on wood. So we're not seeing a rise in anything right now, any of the crimes. I actually called our detective who was assigned to work Discovery Bay, and he doesn't have anything either. He said, again, knock on wood, Discovery Bay's been somewhat quiet. They haven't had any major issues.
Hopefully we keep it that way.
Excellent, right?
Thank you, Lieutenant Johnson. Excellent report.
Thank you, guys.
Have a good night. Do we have a member of the CHP on the line?
We do not, Chair.
How about East Contra Costa Fire District?
Negative.
Yeah, they're probably out firing. There's a couple big fires going on. Okay, and then we'll move forward to presentations. F1.
Okay, Justin, our show with Rudolph Scominini, are you on the line?
Yes, I am.
Okay, please proceed with your presentation.
Okay, thank you. Good evening, board. I'm Justin Show with Blue Earth and Scaminini, district water engineer. We should have in front of you, can everybody hear me okay before I begin?
Yes.
Okay, thank you. There was a PowerPoint that was prepared, so I'm assuming that's what's up on the screen right now. That's what I'll be speaking from, is this PowerPoint presentation that's labeled informational presentation on the draft 2020 Urban Water Management Plan. So what we're going to discuss tonight is the draft Urban Water Management Plan that the staff's been working on over the last several months. We're at a point now where we're ready to present it to the board to bring the board up to speed with what is contained in the plan. And tonight is only an informational presentation so that you can understand and see what's inside the plan. What our objective is to bring the final draft Urban Water Management Plan to the board in June at the June board meeting for a formal public review, a public hearing to review the plan, and then following that, if there's no significant changes made to the plan, then we can move to the board, can move to adopt the plan at that meeting. So tonight it's just informational presentation, and if the board so wishes to discuss it, they can, and we have a few weeks to make changes to the plan before we have to make it publicly available for public review for that formal meeting in June. So I'll begin the presentation now. I'm going to go to slide 2 on the presentation, which is just the topics covering the urban plan and the schedule for the urban water management plan adoption. I'm going to go to slide 3. So this is a required state mandated document that needs to be completed every 5 years. We're building off of the 2015 urban water management plan and incorporating all of the new requirements per legislation. That's what's in the document that you have. And it needs to be submitted to the Department of Water Resources by July 1st, 2021. That would be a document that's been adopted by the Town of Discovery Bay Board of Directors. Moving on to slide 4. The purpose of the Urban Water Management Plan, it's a long-term planning document, and it contains projections of water demand and population, efficiency measures, water shortage contingency planning. It looks ahead at any potential other water supply options. And again, it's just a mandated document by the state to be eligible for grants and loans, and a required document by local area formation commission for approval of any developments outside of urban limit lines. So there's a few things that create teeth in this requirement. Moving on to slide 5. The new requirements, some of the important ones are listed here on slide 5, but we've reviewed all of those requirements that are that we need to put into the plan, and they are in the plan. No need to really cover each one of these bullets right now. Moving on to slide 6, this just provides an overview of what the table of contents for the plan. So it describes how we, it introduces the plan, describes how we prepared it, describes your water system, describes your system uses, has a chapter on the baseline targets, the per capita water use target, a detailed discussion of the system supplies, water supply reliability. It incorporates the water shortage contingency plan that the district's board previously adopted. It outlines the water demand management measures, and then it covers the procedures that would take place for the adoption, submittal, and implementation of the plan. Moving on to slide 7. This is an overview of what we've determined and is what included in the plan, which is population projection to the planning horizon of 2045 from the year 2020. 2020 is your actual population estimate of 15,575, and with the development build-out that's currently known and other possible developments that are on the radar now, plus beyond that, just an assumed growth rate from historical growth of 3.1%, we would project 32,606 individuals by the year 2045. And the table below that is the total water demand, annual water demand that would be associated with that population from 1,050 million gallons today per year to more than doubling 2,491 million gallons at 2045. Moving on to slide 8. This is a summary. Slide 8 is a summary of the baseline water use and target. This was a requirement from 2010 Urban Water Management Plan for us to project what our 2020 per capita water use would be and to take measures to achieve that. And what we are showing here is that we far exceeded those objectives. So the 2020 objective was 209 gallons per capita per day. That's a 20% reduction from 2010. And what we actually had was 185 gallons per capita per day. Moving on to slide 9. The plan includes a description of your system supplies, which is 6 groundwater wells. Those are your system supplies, is the groundwater aquifer. No intertides with other agencies, but the groundwater discussion is updated in the plan from the most recent information and considering information from the groundwater sustainability group, and all indications are that groundwater is considered sustainable in this basin. So there's no red flags or issues there. Moving on to slide 10. In this chapter is a water supply reliability assessment, which looks at the availability of groundwater during, or your water supplies, which for us is groundwater, during an average water year, a single dry water year, and 5 consecutive year drought. And in all cases, the groundwater would not be impacted based on historical evidence where our levels were not impacted from the most recent drought. Moving on to slide 11. Water shortage contingency plan, which was already discussed and described and is included in the plan here. Just describing the response actions that'd be taken if there is a shortage of supply. Moving on to slide 12. Slide 12 is just listing out the demand management measures which are discussed in the plan. These talk about the policies and practices that the district undertakes to keep water demands controlled and helping to meet that target per gallon per capita per day. And it discusses the implementation previously and what the look ahead is for implementation of demand management measures. Moving on to slide 13, this is the schedule for implementation. We are here off to the right-hand side of the schedule bar in May 5th doing a presentation, informational only, for this urban water management plan, just so you can understand what is inside of it, the general contents of it. By May 19th, we would like to issue the urban water management plan, the version of it that we would take to the June board meeting, the June 2nd board meeting. And the reason May 19th is set is because we need to make the plan publicly available for review 2 weeks before that meeting. And there will be newspaper advertisements as well. So from now to May 19th, we can make any changes in the plan and then issue that to make it publicly available for the public review. And then on June 2nd, we would have a public hearing. And I would just say if there's no comments at that public hearing that necessitate any changes to the plan, then the board can move forward to adopt the plan at the June 2nd meeting, and then from there we can put it all together and submit it to the Department of Water Resources before July 1st. So that is the presentation. Slide 14 is a slide that just says questions. So I will stop there. Thank you.
None for me.
No.
Thank you. Just, I just have one quick question. Slide 7 and slide 8, we discussed the system water use. From the information on slide 7, can I get to slide 8 with those with the numbers? I'm just trying to understand how the math get worked out. Are those two slides relevant to each other?
You should be able to get to those numbers directly from that slide.
I'm just trying to understand the 1,050 gallons and then the 261 gallons or 209 gallons.
The actual gallon per capita per day should be just a gross gallons per capita per day. So the total water production in 2020 divided by the total population. So you should be able to get to that number.
Got it. Okay.
185 from those two.
That was my question.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Okay. Well, with that, then I'll open up to public comments. Is there any members of the public that wishes to address this issue?
I just did the math. Yes, it calculated
that. I assumed it did. I was just
keeping you on your toes, Justin.
Well, if there's no public comments, then we'll move forward. Thank you, Justin.
Nice presentation. Thank you.
Thank you for having me.
We'll go to G1, approved community center pool landscaping.
Yes, good evening, board. Staff, in its original budget for the pool refurbishment, included about $6,000 to replace the grass that would be damaged due to the construction process of refurbishing the pool. Staff, in preparation for this, considered the board may be interested in doing an enhancement that was more than just replacing the grass, and that we should bring it to various committees for discussion on whether they thought maybe some greater amenities would be appropriate for surrounding the pool area. We took it to the Park and Rec Committee, and the Park and Rec Committee essentially recommended several things. One is that all grass contained within the perimeter fencing be artificial turf. And the purpose for that is that it was a fairly reasonable cost compared to other items such as cement and hard decking. And that artificial turf over the long term would be more beneficial because grass requires long-term care, long-term irrigation, and plus you're having issues with the pool as grass particles and other debris during maintenance would go into the pool. The Park and Recreation Committee then recommended that the walkway between the community center, and you can see these areas on the attached map to your staff report, that if you're looking at that, the suggestion was to widen the walk near Area A, which is between the community center and the perimeter fence line of the west side of the pool, and to move the fence area that borders that particular area inward to create a wider space between the fence line and the edge of the community center building, and then increase the cement walkway, widen that all the way over to another properly widened walkway that would accommodate wheelchair access. We analyzed the cost of that, as you can see in the attached diagram, and that project would be about $90,000, and if you add a 15% contingency to that, we're looking at about $103,500. The question then became, how do we fund this project is recommended by the Park and Rec Committee, and we took it to the Finance Committee, and the Finance Committee approved that if whatever project does take place that is approved by this board, that Hoffman monies could be used to fund those particular improvements as long-term improvements. However, there was, outside the meeting of the Finance Committee, there was additional staff discussion and some other considerations that the board should consider as a consideration of a modification of the Park and Rec's original suggestions. And to reduce some costs in that area, we were looking at not moving the perimeter fence, and instead removing the shrubs that actually go against the community center building. So remove those and widen the walkway to the end of the building rather than all the way down, because future construction could exist here and future modifications that could exist beyond that edge at end of our community center building in that area, and we'd end up having to tear that out. So the thought was is keep the perimeter fence where it is, get rid of the shrubs, and widen that walkway to the end of the building. And I believe I have some costs on that. What that would essentially do is change the pricing from $90,000 to a pricing of about $78,250. And then when you add a 15% contingency on that, you're looking at a project of about $90,000. So we leave it to the board at this time to discuss what amenities do they want to have, and then how should we finance that? The recommendation of the Finance Committee is to use Hoffman funds, since we have no other funding available that could pay for that. That concludes my presentation, and I seek feedback from the board on what you would like to do.
Let me just thank you for the presentation, Mike. Thank you for representing a lot of different opinions there. I think that personally, when this got to the Finance Committee, my concern is this, is that in June we're getting a report back that's going to tell us what kind of security issues we have with the existing office. Unfortunately, I don't see any way that we're going to end up building or moving the offices somewhere. One of the possible locations may be right here behind us, because it's already part of land that we already own. And I think what I was trying to avoid is spending money on projects outside of the pool area that don't take into consideration the master plan. In other words, if we ran that walkway all the way out there, that walkway may come back out. It may not fit with exit doors from the building, if in fact the building goes there. I don't know that. But rather than spend money now to do something like that, widening it in that area, if the board wants to do that, I could be okay with that, just for accessibility. But ending it at the end of the building, we know we're not going to tear this building down, so it wouldn't be in jeopardy of spending money that we would then turn around and then waste $20,000. I think that was that, and Mike expressed that. That was really my concern at the time. So that's the only input. And other than that, I agree with everything that the Park and Rec Committee came up with, and that's a very small amount of our entire monies that we received from Hoffman, which is $1,372,000. And so I think it would be a wise use of those funds to complete the pool project. And that's really what I'm concerned about, fixing what's inside the fence, not what's outside the fence right now.
I have a quick question. We're widening this to be ADA compliant to that point, but we're ADA compliant current state, correct?
Yes, we are. Technically, we can get, there's access. ADA, well, yes, we have ADA access all the way around the pool. You can get to anywhere through ADA access, accesses, except probably between this fence line.
Okay. I would concur with Kevin. Future thinking, I think we can't be myopic in our thinking. There are some things that are coming through, and while we have $1,300,000, I think we need to be conscientious and wise in how we spend that money and have a plan.
I like it. I know there was a lot of options with a lot of different price tags attached to them, and I think this works. And I know this is very small, but one thing that I, when I was looking at it last time, was the little holes for the umbrellas. When you were all talking about the decking, I thought that would be a great idea because people, I mean, it would make it look, you know, quite nice. And then, so when I was talking to Mike, we were talking about, I wonder if they could go into the areas where your artificial turf is.
Yeah, and I believe that we could. You'd have to watch tripping hazards, of course. So
a little bit sub.
It would just be a nice thing for people that are there, you know, watching people swim and such.
I believe the cost would probably be de minimis on that.
Yeah, small little footing and the
a sleeve.
Yeah. Yeah,
sleeve subsurface.
I would think Director Grabton, if that were to occur, and it's not a bad idea, we would probably have a purchase some umbrellas that would actually belong to the community center because they have to be acceptable to that, and then we would put those out, and then people could choose shade or choose sun. It would be an amenity. I don't know what the cost would be. It would be a maintenance issue because we have to replace those umbrellas as they wear out with the wind and such.
Yeah, I think that's a great idea.
And people would have to put them out and take them back in. So
we're currently in discussions with the Lion Clubs with a donation to seed us with those amenities. So that may very well be through a donation.
Can we push that? Because we have a 15% contingency in this. So if we don't get that from the Lions Club, maybe a portion of that 15% contingency would cover those.
Actually, I think I like the idea that Director Grant came up with us providing some shade structure, and that seems like a cheap way to do it without building big straight shade structures to offer umbrellas here and there for people that don't want to be in the sun, you know, with because of skin conditions or whatever, provides several umbrellas out there. They could fight for them like we do at the resort, you know. Get out at five in the morning and put their towels out, you know.
What is the, what is the life expectancy of the turf?
Well, we think it'll go 15 to 20 years, absent any, you know, damage.
And then, forgive me if I haven't noticed, but so has this plan been sent for approval through the county with the extra widening and
of the pool?
Yes, of like these proposed additions. What I'm wondering is
well, it's a replacement of an existing condition.
Yeah.
What I'm wondering is typically what happens in the experience that I've had when you do build outs like this. That they, when they come out to give you your permits to do everything, that's when they usually do the assessment, and then they start telling you, you have to do this, you have to do this, you have to do this. So
we are before the county right now with a permit on our tough shed.
Okay.
Let's take a wait and see.
Okay. Because that would be a concern is we don't even know if they're going to force some of those proposed changes anyway.
So that brings a good question. Does that open up Pandora's box? If we present it to them and then we say, oh, it's not compliant, and they go, well, just kidding, now you need to make it compliant, now you
well,
need to spend.
They come out with an ADA survey.
Yeah.
For sure.
I think we're past that, though, aren't we?
Yeah.
Well, we have a permit coming up, and, you know, any condition can be attached to a permit. We have not heard anything like that. We have not received any direction yet. We're not going to go to the county and apply for a permit that we don't need. Yeah. So, you know, it's just a wait and see. But that's specific to just the pool. Who knows later
that's,
on?
Again, that's inside the fence.
No, I understand that. My concern is based around an experience I had not too long ago where it was a subsection of one space that was being renovated and it turned out that we had to renovate the parking lot.
Yeah, we're past that, though. We've got the pool approved at the capacity.
So
haven't we, Mike? We've got all the permits for the pool in place.
We have to get this permit for the tough shed. I believe
but the tough,
shouldn't be
the tough shed's an equipment room.
You're talking about something that is completely unattached to any other area.
And
yes,
it's not
they
the public
can come
use.
Up with whatever they want to.
Yeah, okay. So I'm in agreement that I don't think it's wise to do the widening of the one piece that, like you were saying, so.
Well, if I could add a little bit perspective to it from my standpoint, the Park and Rec standpoint, at least half of them.
Ouch.
The widening, there's other concrete necessities that need to take place. If you look at Area B, so we're already going to have a contractor come out there to fill in that area because this is a dirt area. The path on Area A is a small path. And you could barely walk, two people can't walk side by side through it if you want to get to the southern portion of the building. So whether we trim the bushes or whether we move the fence, to me it's a wash, because if we move the fence, we save $5,000 in sod, which is the cost of moving the fence. Either way, if we widen Area A, the concrete cost is fixed. So it's going to be the same. How far we go with that path, okay. I can see that we don't need to go all the way to the other side of the property here, but it will at least allow people who have issues or want to drag equipment or whatever to come and watch the pool from this side, which they can't now unless they go all the way around the building. So it is a very minimal cost. You know, whether or not another building gets built, that could be years from now. And we have the opportunity just to take care of and be done with it today. So that's where, at least, why I said, hey, I think this is a good idea, let's widen this. It's an easy fix. And it's not an expensive fix. Because if we don't do it now, it'll never get done.
I think we need to evaluate the need for it, though. There's nothing that occurs on this lawn.
There's nothing that occurs in that lawn because there's no way to get to that lawn.
There's a walkway. It's always been there. And there's another. We're not here to argue. I'm just saying, I think we're fixing a problem that's not broken.
I just have one minor question, and I don't know if there's, I know some artificial turfs can get really hot and others supposedly can't. I don't know that much about it, but is ours, what we're getting, is that rated at all? Or?
The temperature of a turf, an artificial turf, would be similar to concrete.
Mm-hmm.
So obviously natural grass is the coolest. But there's not much difference between concrete and artificial turf.
Hmm. They're not asphalt-based like they used to be in the old AstroTurf days where they really retain the heat.
Mm-hmm.
They're done. I think Ashley actually has some experience with some AstroTurf in Arizona where it gets
to be... My parents have their whole house is AstroTurf. They have a putting green in the backyard. It's 150 in the summer. And it's somewhat hot, but I think our thought process was it provides a little bit of... some greenery in that area, and it's soft.
Yeah.
You know, the other option was concrete or grass, but grass, the maintenance of the grass and the water is quite a bit more.
So we believe that it would be similar to the sand at the beach.
Yeah.
What? Just out of curiosity, what's underneath the turf? Is that just this price includes leveling the dirt?
Yeah, that price includes hauling out of material because it needs to be. Two or three inches less material, and then sand, and then turf.
So staff is looking for two directions from the board. Okay. I'm sorry.
We need public comment before staff makes.
We'll open up to public comment. Is there any members of the public that wishes to chime in?
This is David Kane. Just for informational purposes, what is the Hoffman Funds, just so I can understand what those are? And second question is there a link or somewhere I can access the plans that you're looking at about widening that particular sidewalk online, just so I can visualize what's being discussed?
Yeah, all the agenda items are online on the town website. And then as far as specific questions, let me recommend contacting staff at the town office. And they'd be happy to go over some of those detailed questions you have.
You mentioned the Hoffman Funds. It's a thing, and I was just wondering what it was generally.
Yeah, David, unfortunately, at these board meetings, we're not really in a position to have a one-on-one dialogue with each other. You're welcome to comment on what we're discussing, but as far as you need to contact staff to get those questions answered ahead of time.
Or after.
So I apologize for the lack of an answer for you. Is there any other public comment?
That's the only member of the public on the line right now, Chair.
Thank you. Then we'll be back to staff.
Okay, so what staff is requesting from the board is one, approval to use Hoffman monies to fund this project. And secondarily, we'd like to know if you wanted to go with the original park and recreation recommendation, or if you would like to modify it to the staff's choice B recommendation, or make some other modification.
I would like to make a motion that we accept staff's recommendation with the modification of not moving the fence at area C and including all other modifications within the fence area, of minus of course area B being filled in with concrete, and then addressing anything outside of the fence at another time. And and as part of that motion, that we approve using funds from the Hoffman mitigation money.
Do we have a second?
Second.
Roll call.
Director Graham?
Aye.
Director Callahan?
Aye.
Director Porter?
Aye.
Vice President Graves?
Aye.
President Gateau?
Aye.
Staff would like a clarification if I could. Does that include the area A walkway, the shrubs being removed, and the area? No, it does not.
No, and only that's why I specified within the fenced area as it exists right now. We can address that walkway anytime.
Very good.
Okay. And then staff have clarification?
We will modify the budget to include that plus a 15% contingency.
Thank you.
All right, thank you.
Okay, then let's move forward to director's reports. There was a finance committee. You want to go over the finance?
Sure. So the special finance committee met specifically to address the funding of the completion of the pool project. I'm going to say it. We're going to complete the pool project. So finance committee met specifically for that purpose, and you've heard the results of our. We recommended that we use the additional funds from the Hoffman negotiations to pay for that.
Thank you. Communication committee.
We met today and discussed changing how we deliver the water report every year. So we're going to start delivering it electronically, and that will save us a little more than $5,700.
Correct.
And we'll give people options if they can print it if they would like, they can read it online, or they can request a copy and we will send it to them. But that is savings for us.
Can I ask a question on that?
Yes.
So if somebody requests we're not going to print a limited amount. If somebody requests the report, we'll just print it out for them and give it to them?
Yes.
Great. That's a good idea.
Okay. And then staff worked on a template that we're going to start using for announcements, for updates, and the example that you all have shows what the invitation will be like for the town hall meeting. But we wanted to have some sort of identity to put things on the website, online, in the newspaper, whatever. People will automatically recognize this after time and know when we're giving an update, whether it be on landscaping, a project, whatever the case may be. So this is what we have decided on.
My only comment is it's missing our logo.
That is a valid comment.
The town logo, I mean, from a marketing standpoint or a branding standpoint, and believe me, I should defer to Mike Callahan when it comes to branding and logos, but that's the one thing I don't see on here, because we is our logo, and I don't know if we want to include that or not.
And Mike is the one that worked on this, but if you look, he took the center of our logo, and that's what the...
Okay.
That's from, but you know,
the borders are the colors, the town colors.
I got you. Okay.
We could just do the little circle, like right in the middle, right there, like right here. Like
I probably go for the cantaloupe.
Right.
We could. Yeah.
What
do you think?
I think personally, putting a logo on a logo.
Yeah.
Well, I mean,
okay.
This is.
But no, I
think
you're.
You see what I'm saying? So it's. But branding is branding, and I don't know that it makes that much difference. And I don't know. This is going to be an electronic. This is for electronic use, and
it'll probably have
something that's going out with the logo as part of it somewhere. So I don't think it's a problem.
It will be in print sometimes. Yeah. You know, when we send something. And then we also discussed beginning plans for our town hall.
Oh, that's right. We got a closed session. Thank you for that.
Okay, Park Recreation, we also had a meeting today. I'll let Director Porter.
So we had a quick but efficient meeting today. We discussed the refurbishing of the tennis courts. We're going to resurface 3 courts this year, resurface 3 courts next year. The cost was approximately $24,000, should be done towards the end of June. And then we also discussed what staff had recommended for the Prop 68 grant money, which they kind of gave us 5 options of what they were looking to do with that money. Let me scroll down. Sorry, I'm just trying to make sure I don't miss anything. But essentially what we've decided to do and what staff recommended was using that money on Cornell Park and utilizing it to resurface and replace hoops of the basketball hoops and barbecue area. Thank you. And barbecue area, tables, prep table, refurbished grass area, and then kind of after that, uniform benches, trash, recycling, and then sports fields and restrooms exceeds the cost of what the grant has been allocated for, and so those will be items that we'll address at a later date. That was all.
Awesome. Water, wastewater, you guys had a meeting as well.
Yes, we discussed several very interesting items. One that was interesting, but not the most interesting, was the future purchase of a vac truck. As has been mentioned before, our current vac truck is out of compliance with regards to engine emissions and other things that the state mandates. So we're still in the process of doing some research on that, which is being hindered, of course, by supply chain challenges and other things with regards to vehicles. We did discuss a very interesting situation with the upcoming Cicchini property, the 2,500 or so homes that's going to be built east of here, and or that's proposed to be built east of here, and we discussed a strategy to make sure that the town is well represented with regards to responsibility and costs of whatever it takes to provide the water and wastewater, specifically today the wastewater, for that project, and that would be expansion of the sewage treatment plant, delivery of those things, and other requirements that may be in place by the state at this point. It was a very well put together strategy by our town engineer, Gregory Harris, and that will be coming to you guys as an informational packet down the road when it gets, right? Isn't that what we decided? Okay. And then another item we discussed, we approved to move forward with our geotechnical engineer. The person that put together the proposal is also going to do our inspections when we get to the D-Night project, and the ongoing diffuser project, which is our discharge into Old River and the challenges we've had with silt and other things getting into it, and trying to find the most cost-effective way to distribute that water that complies with the state mandates, but isn't exorbitantly expensive. And we have some really good ideas, very creative ideas that staff brainstormed on and actually came through with better ideas than our consultants had. So we're waiting to hear how that works out from a price standpoint, and that will also be coming to the entire board for discussion at some point in the future.
Great. Any other reportable items?
I wanted to report on the code enforcement meeting. I know it's under director training, and I sorry, submitted my notes in late. But we had a court of code enforcement meeting. I think it's really good we have those monthly. I know, President Cadeau, you brought up the subject of the sound walls and the replacement. That's something that every code meeting we have, I'm consistently asking, when are we going to get the enforcement on this? When are we going to have what we need for that? The other thing that was discussed was we had received communication, anonymous communication about code enforcement with trailers and cars and stuff like that. And it was discussed that they were going to be doing a sweep again to address those issues. Also kind of asked that they do those more consistently. It seems like we're getting quite a few complaints about it. I think the other part of it was interesting to hear what our surrounding communities are having to deal with. And I would say at large, we have very little items to deal with in comparison to the areas around us. So.
Next time you go to that meeting, I would like to know what we can do about commercial vehicles who are parked on our streets. And I know these people move it like 4 inches, you know, every other day, but when you come around a corner, it's really hard to see. At some point, there will be an accident there. But, you know, what can people do? And so I know they've...
That is not a code enforcement. Code enforcement is on private property, so this would be public streets. That would be a CHP issue. But there is some code enforcement on the Sheriff's Department side that deals with what they call abandoned vehicle violations. And usually an abandoned vehicle violation requires 72 hours of non-movement before you're first warned, so it's very difficult.
It's not abandoned.
But there are some things that can be done, you know, through the county potentially that we might be able to follow up on with Leah, and that is having an ordinance that would prohibit the parking of certain size commercial vehicles, for example, something over 6,000 pounds gross vehicle weight or something along those lines might be something we can entertain later.
We need the wall vehicle. Wall ordinance.
Yes.
Wall ordinance.
As soon as that gets done.
Okay, thanks for that report. Director Training, Carolyn Graham, you had a couple reports.
I attended the Byron School District board meeting. It lasted for about an hour and a half, 2 hours. Very interesting. As I was telling Mike, it's really very interesting, not only what people are talking about, but how the boards conduct themselves comparing it to our board. And then the Tri-Delta Transit Board meeting, and there's a lot of turnover right now in that office, people leaving the state and a few other things, but it was only a 40-minute.
In the Byron School District meeting, did they discuss reopening plans for next year, how it's going with current situation with students?
You should have the minutes in here. They bounced around quite a bit. They didn't give it anything like that in detail. And they had a closed session right before the meeting, so some of those things must have been
discussed in there.
Discussed.
It's okay. I can go look at the minutes.
Yeah, I have it.
Thank you.
Okay, well, if there's nothing else, then I'm going to turn the meeting over to counsel to bring us into closed session.
Thank you. At this time, the Town of Discovery Bay Board of Directors will adjourn to closed session to address the item on the agenda identified as 01. Board of Directors, that you do have the call-in number. Any members of the public that are on the line, we will be returning to this closed session, or back to the open session after closed session is concluded. But at this time, we do not expect any reportable action.